Hi, everybody. During the months of March and April, we are highlighting the work of Rios to Rivers in our community effort to showcase organizations who are working towards social justice, environmental action, and more inclusive public lands.
Rios to Rivers inspires the protection of rivers worldwide by investing in underserved and indigenous youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and support them in their development as the next generation of environmental stewards.
Founded in 2012, Rios to Rivers programs have connected 234 underserved and indigenous students from 20 endangered river basins in 7 countries. The programs have included students and community leaders from 21 indigenous nations.
Rios to Rivers envisions a world in which youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and tribal communities are equipped to become the next generation of passionate leaders for healthy rivers and communities.
Make monthly charitable giving a trend in your life in 2024 and help to support Rios to Rivers this March and April. Visit the link in our Instagram bio for more information.
Michael, what am I going to do?
About what?
Schitt's Creek is going to be over after season 6.
I know.
It is the most bittersweet thing. I am very, very happy that they get to end the show when they choose.
Right.
And I always prefer that.
Yeah.
One of my favorite shows of all time ever is called Slings and Arrows, and it is also out of Canada.
Right. I remember you talk about this.
Oh my God, I love like, it. It takes place at a Shakespeare festival. I'm obsessed. They did 3 seasons. They did 6 episodes a season. They asked them too. They were like, do you guys want to come back? Like revive it? Like, because all these shows are being revived. And all of them were like, we would love to come back and do this together. Like, we're all on board, but like, the story is finished.
Yeah.
Like, we're not going to retread that.
Yeah.
And I just love that. And it makes that piece whole and beautiful. And
yeah.
Perfect.
I think some seasons of television shows just stretch on to artistically have the choice to be like, we had a vision. We've seen that vision through to its end. And now we're done and we want to go out feeling like we've accomplished everything we set out to do is a pretty admirable thing, because I feel like a lot of the times it's like, well, how can we squeeze another dime out of this?
I know. You know,
cash cow.
I know. But yeah. I so deeply trust that show, Schitt's Creek, to just give us the most wonderful like end to that story.
Yeah.
And I have no idea what it could be, but I can't wait for what it is.
Right.
And but I fully trust them.
I feel like the same can be said about like Parks and Rec. I feel like that was like an artistic choice to be like, okay, we're good. We've hit our point that we wanted to hit. And we're not gonna just like continue to make like pump seasons out. Like, this is where we want this to end. And, you know, there's a few shows that are definitely like that. And I do really appreciate that, because then you have some wonderful shows that are so short-lived and don't get that experience. And then you have shows that decide, well, let's be revived by Netflix, like Arrested Development. Like the first 3 seasons of that are a gem. And then Netflix is like, let's do some more. And I just feel like it's not as good as it could be. But it's still funny.
What's the show that you're very, very happy to see never come back?
Mm. Do you have one locked and loaded?
Scandal.
Yeah, I guess that is probably.
It just was like,
it just stretched beyond all belief ever.
Yes.
Yeah.
It did.
I'd imagine that How to Get Away with Murder is probably like edging towards that.
I dip in and out of that occasionally, and the stakes are so high, and I do kind of love it.
Mm, okay.
So it's still working for me a little bit.
Scandal. Yeah, Scandal.
I'm looking for adventure, wanna follow on the trail, or get a little lost and let the wind fill my sails. Get up when the stars still fill the sky, don't wake the sun. There's so much to be done, and the day has just begun. Go where the postcards are real, you can feel. You can open your eyes and open your heart when you gaze at the national park. National Parks.
Follow you, I'll follow you there.
At the National Parks.
Follow you, I'll follow you there.
Welcome to Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast. Today, we are talking about our last day in Moab, Utah, when we went to Canyonlands National Park.
After we had already spent half a day in Arches National Park.
Yeah, we spent half a day.
We spent it.
Arches National Park.
Arches.
We did, and we had hiked Delicate Arch and walked through Park Avenue.
That's right. Corrections Corner.
Grand Avenue.
Right.
Which is what we incorrectly said last time. We really were there, actually. Yeah. We just sometimes we get the names of trails wrong because
we're only human.
We're only human, and it's actually kind of easy to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
just like Smoky is a weird spelling.
Smoky is a weird spelling.
Mm-hmm.
Things we've learned.
Smoky Mountains.
Arches and Canyonlands are literally like across the highway from each other.
Sure.
You know,
they are a stone's throw in like the grand scheme of like distance.
Competing, you know, video rental stores. Yeah.
So we left Blockbuster because we couldn't find True Lies, and we went down the street to Hollywood
Video.
And hoped that True Lies was there, you know?
Right. So, and we searched.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to see Jamie Lee Curtis do that dance.
Yes. So that I could learn the moves to do myself.
Right.
Right, exactly.
To Britney Spears' Oops, I Did It Again.
Yeah, let's be real.
Yeah.
Let's be real about what the reality of the situation is for the two of us.
I see.
So here's some information about Canyonlands National Park. It is located in the southeastern corner of Utah. It is right next door to Arches National Park. But it is also literally next door to Dead Horse State Park. Capitol Reef National Park is not too far away either. It is very close to Moab, which is where we stayed. It's this little town that you can access both of those parks really
easily.
What
a quiet village.
Yes.
Every day.
Like the one before.
So Canyonlands was established in September of 1964. So she's a Virgo.
She's a Virgo.
And it makes sense. All that earth, it's just like
full of earth
signs. We can kind of distinguish and break up Canyonlands into four sections. You have Islands in the Sky, which is what we hiked when we were in Canyonlands. There's the Needles District, there is the Maze, and then there's the Rivers District. We got a lot of our information from our Airbnb host.
We did. We asked her which section we should look into. We had thought about like venturing down into the Needles because
right.
we thought that was...
There were a decent amount of hikes there, I feel like.
Lots of hikes because we wanted to get on foot. What we quickly realized was that Canyonlands is more of a like drive and look. There's some stuff to do on foot and maybe a little more stuff to do on foot than in Arches. But the reason it is more so a drive and look is because
it's gigantic.
So much driving.
Right.
Because it's so enormous.
Right. We scratched the surface when we were there. You know, Islands in the Sky is like a manageable portion of the park. There are a decent amount of hikes there. But we just like barely scratched the surface of the park itself.
I mean, hundreds and hundreds of miles of park
right.
is what you're dealing with.
Yeah, it's 527 square miles.
Cool, girl. Yeah,
which is about 337,598 acres. That's big.
That's big.
That's real big.
She had told us Needles was actually a section that we should do the next time we come to Canyonlands, and that we should do Islands in the Sky first.
Right.
And that it was a little more of exactly what we were looking for,
right.
which and is like doing some driving and looking, but also getting out on our feet and hiking around and getting up close to some stuff.
And I think it's like much more accessible because what we quickly found out too is that Needles, like you have to drive down the highway and then you basically, and we saw this on our way out of Canyonlands or out of Moab the following day, you have to drive down the highway and then there's a turnoff for the needle section and you have to drive in like how far, like 100 miles before you even get to like your first available hike, something right. crazy like that.
It is that big.
Yeah, it is really, really big.
Big. And there's no way to get to the needle section from the Islands in the Sky section mm-hmm. because there's only like one road that goes into the Islands in the Sky section from the top.
And you're, again, you're on a mesa again.
Top of a mesa. Yeah. And then you got to go back out to that main highway and go down like the outside.
Back towards Moab and then...
past Moab and go south of Moab.
Yeah.
And then you turn west to go...
Into
the park again.
Yeah.
But you have to go further out this time. The park's not as close from this area.
Yeah.
That will take you into the needle section, but it's not direct. You kind of have to go like up and then down again. And it's just like, that's the only road. Yeah. So that's your only option. So she said it would be a lot of time driving and not being in the park if we went to Needles.
Yeah.
So we should go to Islands in the Sky. There was a ton to see. So that is what we decided to do. And with that, let's take a break.
Hey, everybody. We are actively planning our hiking for this year. And so you know what that means. Our moon travel guides are out and about. We're marking them up and we're writing in all of our notes. We sincerely love them and we use moon travel guides all the time.
Moon is our favorite travel guidebook publisher because their authors are real people who live in and know the areas they're writing about like the back of their hand.
And we can trust them. From hikes to campsites to city sites to restaurants, Moon Travel has you covered.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings might take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel has you covered.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel.
Don't spend months trying to craft the perfect getaway when you can do it all with Moon.
Whether you're headed out abroad, planning to take on the open road, or want to wander the trails of a national park, make sure to pack a Moon travel guide with you.
And through the end of 2024, our listeners can exclusively get 20% off any Moon travel guide when you go to moon.com. Use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's right. That is moon.com and use code GAZE24. And that's GAZE24 for 20% off any Moon travel guide in Moon's entire library at moon.com. And that is exclusively for GAZE listeners.
It's time for a game.
So Canyonland sounds very much like a theme park where one could ride all sorts of attractions based on a canyon. Tell me what your natural geological themed park would be named and what its biggest attraction would be.
Great. Why don't you answer this first?
Oh, I see. You're throwing it back to me. I recently read an article about a cave in Vietnam that is so large that it has its own atmosphere. Like there are actually clouds that roll through this cave. There are like plants, fauna, like it's gigantic. So I feel like I would have, my park would be called Caveland. And it would have a giant stalactite that would be draped from the ceiling that would actually have a natural staircase carved in it so that you could actually climb to the roof of the cave.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that would be Caveland.
Mine is inspired by something that happened in a small Mississippi town that my mom used to live in.
Mm-hmm.
Mine would be called Sinkhole Land.
Oh.
Because sinkholes are a real thing.
Yeah, they are.
There was a car dealership that was right near the sinkhole.
Oh, God.
And many of their cars just like fell right into the sinkhole. So I would do Sinkhole Land. And to honor that tragedy, I would create some sort of sculpture that all of these like cars had created when they like fell and smashed into each other.
So would Sinkhole Land and Caveland be competing parks near each other, like arches and canyonlands?
I think that Sinkhole Land would be like, people can't believe that it's true, and they have to come and see this nonsense.
So it's like a roadside sort of attraction.
It's like a roadside attraction, and yours is like a proper, like, lovely thing that people, like, pilgrimage to, you know, to see.
We'd spent most of our early morning in Arches. We, like Dusty had said at the beginning, had done our hike out to Delicate Arch. We had seen some of the other arches that were there, and then also made our way through Park Avenue before we zipped on out. And just like most days, we packed a lot of snackage with us so that we didn't necessarily have to stop hiking in the middle of the day to find sustenance. When we were driving out towards Canyonlands, we definitely made a stop at this like outpost, like general store,
right,
gas station that had like basically like where we parked, like a gigantic signboard that had like all wooden signs painted with like different cities and their mileage from that point.
And why did we stop there?
Because Dusty needed a Diet Coke, but you know. This is a running theme here.
I don't think that's true.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's true. With full knowledge of of things that are false.
Of things that are false. Yes, Miss Diet Coke over here. I feel like there's a game somewhere where it's somewhere. Like, you know, a Sophie's Choice.
Things I'm working on. Yeah, things I'm working on.
I know.
I've had significantly less this week.
You have. You've cut back.
Hugely. So we go to this little general store, and then we make the turnoff for Canyonlands.
Yeah. And you turned in to Canyonlands, and I remember it was a pretty, like, it wasn't as windy on the way up as it was going into Arches. Like, I remember, like, you kind of turned off the road, you, like, had a gradual incline, and then it was, like, a pretty straight shot, I feel like, up. So you were on top of that mesa.
And then you drove for a little while. It was totally flat.
Yeah.
It was mesa.
And you drove for a little while before you hit that ranger station, which is what we ended up stopping at to get our map and get a little bit of information from the ranger.
When we had pulled into the Arches Visitor Center the first time on our first day, they had sold Canyonlands patches in there. So we got our patches there. And then when we pulled up to the Canyonlands Ranger Station, we'd asked for a map there and some suggestions as to what to do.
Right.
And the ranger gave us some thoughts. And because we already had patches, we didn't even go into the Islands in the Sky Visitor Center. We just kept driving.
Yeah. Yeah. So we ended up driving in and we made our first stop at Mesa Arch, which is a pretty...
It's the most famous thing that gets photographed at Canyonlands most of the time.
Yeah.
Now, the reason they call this area Islands in the Sky is from atop this mesa that you are on, when you look out, there's just like so many enormous canyons that are connected with like pieces of earth that just look like islands.
Or like other mesas
coming up from the canyon that look like they are floating in the sky.
Yeah.
And that is where you get Islands in the Sky from. It is one of the largest things I've ever seen.
Like, yeah, it's incredibly vast. Things. Yeah.
Now, that all being said, Mesa Arch, which is this arch that's right at the edge of this
cliff, basically.
Cliff face of Islands in the Sky, looks enormous. Like, it looks gigantic in every photo that you see. But really, it's like, I don't know, 10 feet wide, maybe? Maybe 10 feet wide.
I don't know about that. It is pretty long, but it's not as tall as one would, like, I think, suspect it to be. Yeah.
But I mean, it was sort of, to me, the equivalent of, like, seeing what you think is a really large art piece, but it's actually not really that big.
Yeah, yeah.
So...
Definitely.
But it does definitely take photos from, you know, underneath it. And you can see the horizon.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of people
do.
And
it does create like a really kind of picturesque window out into the rest of the park, which is really beautiful. And it was a really clear, beautiful day. As we had said in our second Arches episode, it was a stark contrast to the gray day we had had the first day when we were in the Moab area. So... It was beautiful. And this is not a difficult trail. It's about a 0.6-mile loop, so it's only about a half mile.
To the Mesa Arch?
Mm-hmm.
And then
back to the car. So it's kind of like a no-brainer.
It's hardly even a thing.
Yeah.
It's hard to even call it a trail.
Yeah. But, it is sandy. It's really like you park and then it's not that far out to the arch and then back. You kind of loop it. That was our first stop. There's also one thing that a lot of parks have that I feel like we took more advantage of here, is they had like kind of pull-offs and overlooks that a lot. There were two that we definitely stopped at during our, you know, length of the trip. So there was the Schaefer Canyon overlook is one that we definitely took a peek at. I think on our way back out of the park. But there were other, I think the Hoffman Overlook was another. That is something that, you know, you could definitely pull off and take a peek at, you know, on your way in or out. And I think we tried to do most of those on our outward bound sort of trip there. We really wanted to hike a much lengthier hike. So in looking at the map, there was really one pretty long hike in the area, and it centered around what was called Upheaval Dome. And Upheaval Dome is a gigantic crater which was formed by, I believe, a meteorite crash hundreds of thousands of years ago. The hike that we ended up on was called the Syncline Loop, and it was an 8-mile hike or right around that crater of Upheaval Dome.
Because that mesa was so huge, like you forget you're on top of it.
Yeah.
Like it just felt like...
It just felt like level Earth. Like level you were Earth like again. Sea level. Yeah.
Right. But you weren't.
No, because you can't see off the edge.
No.
Yeah.
And that was the other scary thing. I'm like, we're literally on top of this thing. And like, I don't know. Like you could like run off at any point in time. Now, on top of that mesa, there is a pull off to go to this Dead Horse State Park, which is an entire state park that is... outside
of Canyonlands,
but I believe still on top of that mesa.
Right, it was.
So, and you could get there, but
this was before the ranger station, though.
Right before the ranger station.
Yeah, I feel like there was an entrance fee there, I believe.
Yeah, there was. We had made the decision to go hike around the Upheaval Dome on the Syncline Loop. We made our way to what essentially became a fork in the road. We could either go left or we could go right. And if you went right, that's what would take you to the Upheaval Dome trailhead.
Mm-hmm.
This was an 8-mile loop. And you were like, let's do it. And I was like, girl, I am tired. Are you sure we want to do this? And you were like, uh-huh. I am very sure I want to do this right now. And I was like, all right, okay. All right, we're going to do it. We're going to do it. I'm going to rally and we're going to do it. I was like, oh, I don't know if there's going to be parking. I mean, I was just finding everything because I was just exhausted.
Right.
We make it to the parking lot of the Upheaval Dome trailhead, like campground area. Mm-hmm. And there was plenty of parking and you were like, okay, that's time.
Our good old friend Pit Toilet was there.
Yep. Good friend Pit Toilet. We said hello to that girl. And then we made our way out into the trailhead.
Right.
This hike was technically labeled strenuous.
Right.
Which we'll put her on the Karen Stone scale at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
But I was a little trepidatious about this hike because I was like, we have already done Delicate Arch today, which isn't terribly hard, but it was still like a lot of energy. Like, do I have the energy to do this today?
Yeah.
Overall, I would say I didn't find it to be terribly strenuous.
No.
I believe somebody who was coming back when we were going in was like, oh yeah, we made it all the way around. And then it's kind of up and down when you get onto the other side of the loop.
Yeah.
Like across the way.
Yeah.
But it's all worth it.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, all right, great.
But I think before we actually got on the Syncline Loop is there is a mile hike out to a point on the crater, and that is called the Upheaval Dome Trail. And so we took that out. There's two overlooks that you can see there. There's the first overlook and the second overlook. And we went out to that first, which was only like a mile out.
Right.
So and like that's kind of like your trailhead starter. And it's basically like at the trailhead, it's like a trident. And like we went up the middle part of the trident for those two overlooks first.
Those were super cool.
Yeah.
And I really liked those.
And that was like a really good way to kind of like get a glimpse of the crater at first before looping back and doing this. Because I would say at this point, it's early afternoon, probably like around 1 o'clock that we're there. So daylight savings time had already happened. We still had a lot of light left within us.
And that was, you know, an uphill climb, that 1 mile thing. And like you did make it to the top. It was like, you were standing on top of the world. All the islands in the sky are all over around that, like beyond that crater are all these other things that are just huge. We turn around and we go back down that 1 mile trail and then we head to the right to start this loop trail.
Yeah.
I remember like it was like up and down, sandy, deserty kind of trail terrain for a little while. Then we got to this one area that had like this giant, giant boulder that was like hanging over the edge of this canyon. And if you wanted to, you could go up on it and walk down it. Do you remember this? I loved this. I mean, my fear of heights was a little triggered, but it wasn't too bad because there was a lot of space there.
Yeah.
So we went down there and we took a lot of pictures. And then we came back and then we had to go down a few switchbacks. We ran into some people right around there on the trail right there.
Right. There were some older folks that were, I think, New Yorkers. So we got to talking to them about just like, oh, where are you from? Like, I mean, this is a very common like thing I feel like that happens on the trail.
All the
like,
time.
Hi, how are you? Like, how, where are you traveling from? And so then like, you know, if you're from the tri-state, it's like, oh my God, you know, because we live on top of each other out here on the East Coast. And out West, it's like a totally different world of like, oh, here's a town and okay, go 100 miles and there's your next town. It's just like sparse and spread out. So, you know, here it's like, okay, we can just like talk like we're neighbors. Even
and
though
I remember
that
they had hiking poles and I really wanted hiking poles in that moment.
That was your love affair. It started there.
I remember we made our way down those switchbacks and then we were looking and we were like, which way do we go?
Yeah.
Like we couldn't really see. And what was like marking the trails?
I think it was Karen's. I'm pretty sure it was Karen's along that trail.
We get down to the bottom of these switchbacks and I'm looking out and I'm like, I'm not seeing these Karens anywhere. And finally, like way off in the distance, we see one. And we were like, oh, there it is. We have to go that way.
Yeah.
And we didn't think we would have to go that way.
No.
But we did. And then that led us to going around this boulder that was literally like at the corner of the edge of this, you know, canyon crater. There was this like old, old railing around this boulder to keep you inside.
Yeah.
I think I took out my phone to take one quick photo and like threw it back in my bag. And I was like, I'm not. And by that, I mean, I carefully placed it back in my bag because I did not want it to fall.
Yeah.
And then we made our way around and then we've sort of found our way back to the edge of this canyon.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel like this is one of those times where we really kept pretty quiet. Like we talked a little bit. But I feel like we were also just like kind of in like one of those times where we just both zoned into being in nature and like were very just like kind of peaceful. And I think it was also probably the fact that we were just tired from the day.
And with that, let's take another break.
Hey, everybody. We are actively planning our hiking for this year. And so you know what that means. Our moon travel guides are out and about. We're marking them up and we're writing in all of our notes. We sincerely love them and we use moon travel guides all the time.
Moon is our favorite travel guidebook publisher because their authors are real people who live in and know the areas they're writing about like the back of their hand.
And we can trust them. From hikes to campsites to city sites to restaurants, Moon Travel has you covered.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings might take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel has you covered.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel.
Don't spend months trying to craft the perfect getaway when you can do it all with Moon.
Whether you're headed out abroad, planning to take on the open road, or want to wander the trails of a national park, make sure to pack a Moon travel guide with you.
And through the end of 2024, our listeners can exclusively get 20% off any Moon travel guide when you go to moon.com. Use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's right. That is moon.com and use code GAZE24. And that's GAZE24 for 20% off any Moon travel guide in Moon's entire library at moon.com. And that is exclusively for GAZE listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to Drag Queen Corner.
And who's I'm your host, Smokey McGee, over here.
Who's in the...
I got my scratchy voice.
Who's in the corner today?
Who's in the corner today? Who's wearing that dunce hat today?
Exactly.
Mama, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and everyone in between, please welcome to the stage, Miss Ariel View.
Miss Ariel View.
In honor of Canyonlands and all that the eye can see, Miss Ariel View.
The panorama shots.
That's that right. One
should totally take yeah. in Canyonlands.
Oh yeah, Miss Ariel Miss View is Ariel serving View. You some, you know, some photog realness here.
Yes, she is. I feel like Ariel View is an aerial dancer,
mm-hmm.
and she does it with like aerial silks.
Mm.
Like she's a drag queen that is aerial silk dancing.
Okay.
In front of panorama images of the Southwest.
Okay. See, I feel like she has like very specific outfits. I like where you're coming at this with her mm-hmm. aerial acrobatics.
Yeah.
I feel like she also, her outfits double as parachutes and like she parachutes in and her parachute changes into her outfit. Like it fully like reveals into a full length ball gown.
Oh, I like that.
You know, she could even drop from her aerial silk and that could unwrap into like a beautiful leotard swimsuit
totally.
Combination.
She has worked really hard to distance herself from being compared to the Little Mermaid.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing about her look looks like Ariel, the Little Mermaid. There's mm-hmm. nothing about her that does. Long flowing hair, lots of like flowy fabrics.
I feel like she has like a very intense sleeve of feathers, like a feather tattoos, like all down her one arm.
Does the performer have that? Or does Ariel View the character have that?
Mm.
The sleeve of tattoos.
I feel like Ariel View the character.
So how does that performer get it? Is that through like a nude, like pantyhose type
I think
situation?
It is, yeah.
That Ariel View
mm-hmm.
dawns every time. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, I feel like that like really speaks to her. Like character of being of the ether. Being of the, you know, the wind, being of the element of the air.
Yes.
I'm just like feeling all my air signness over
you
here.
You are. Yes, you are. What is her like finale aerial performance song?
That's a great question. I do feel like she sings that Bette Midler song from Beaches.
The Wind Beneath My
Wings. The Wind
wing.
Beneath
that's
My
Wings.
That's
a little on the nose scroll.
Yeah.
I think we can come up with something a little bit stronger than that.
Okay.
I was going to say...
That's like for her somber performances.
No, I feel like her somber performances is the Dolly Parton cover of Bob Dylan's Blowin' in the Wind.
Oh. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is her like finale moment mm. of the Ariel View performance.
Mm.
I also sort of would imagine that she would perform like with the audience on all sides.
Oh, yeah. It's a circular
so
stage.
So that it is literally an aerial view. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Inspiring an aerial view.
Yeah.
So ladies, gentlemen, and everyone in between, please welcome to the arena.
Miss Ariel View. So we can, you know, really continue walking around this crater, this upheaval dome. And I think, you know, we hadn't been to Grand Canyon yet, but I feel like this was kind of like a nice prelude for that in that it was like, hey, you're walking around the rim of something
yeah.
and like, here it is. You're just seeing the same thing over and over again as you walk around.
Yeah. And we were seeing it from various angles.
I mean, it's freaking gigantic.
It is. Like, and it was beautiful.
Right. Like and if you fell in, you would tumble for a long time down.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't like sheer walls.
But I wasn't, as someone afraid of heights, yeah. I wasn't triggered
no.
by really any
you weren't
of this.
Doomed if you like went over the edge.
It was a little up and down and up and down on the opposite side, just like that
yeah.
guy had said.
Yeah. I do feel like there was no one.
There
like,
was no
we
one.
We really didn't run
there
into anybody.
There were two older gentlemen who had gone...
The other way. They were
the
coming
other
the other way.
Yeah. And then we did pass by
yes,
them
yeah.
as they were coming our way. But that was really it. And there was nobody else there.
Oh, no. And I feel like for some reason, one of us didn't bring a bag, or like we didn't have our bags with us. We're like, oh it's only right. 8 miles. And I don't really feel like carrying a bag right now. Like we like hiked out to, I know we didn't carry bags for Mesa Arch. We're like, oh, well, this is 0.6 miles. Nothing. And I think we're like, okay, well, I think we had only intended to go and do the upheaval dome 1 mile. And we're like, let's do this 8 miles. And I don't think we went back to the car, which was silly. That was like dumb.
That was really silly. But
whatever. But I do remember like finishing up and like racing to the car and being like, I need all the Cliff Bars.
Give me
the water. Give me everything.
Absolutely
like,
everything.
Hungry hippos over here coming to the car. Going to gobble up your white
balls. I remember getting to the section that finally like, you know, completed the loop.
Yeah.
And then you have to turn off to go back to the parking lot, yeah. Which was still like a half mile.
Yeah.
Like walk. And yeah, I was running to the car because yeah. I was like, there are Cliff Bars in that car.
Yeah. I know.
And I want those Cliff Bars.
I want them. I want them Cliff Bars. So we definitely like hung out at the car for a little bit post hike and just like chilled there before we even got back in the car.
And at that point, I was ready to go.
Yeah.
I was fully ready to go.
Yeah. I think we both kind of were at that point where we were close to our wall, but there was
and then we started driving out and you were like,
There's Whale Rock.
Can't we go to that? Right and there. I was like, we can pull up to it and
assess how we feel.
See how we feel. That was me compromising.
I know.
And bargaining.
Yeah.
So yeah, we pull up to Whale Rock. And I noticed that there were people on top of it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that intrigued me enough to be like, okay, well, let's just do it.
And it was pretty tall, too.
I wanted to get up there and do it.
Yeah. Canyonlands gave us some of what Devil's Garden served us.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
In a lot of ways. And I feel like we got most of that for Whale Rock, because Whale Rock was like a solve and adventure. And I believe there were some Karens that marked like the kind of the steps you had to take to get up.
I just remember getting to the top of Whale Rock. All of this just reminds me of the Britney Spears music video, I'm Not a Girl, Not Yet a
right.
Woman.
And I feel like you pulled that up on your phone.
I did. I pulled it up on my phone and then like
played it
and filmed like you like doing a spin or something up top and yeah. imagined that it was playing in the background.
Yeah.
I know.
The wonders of technology.
And I think just being gay.
And pre-Instagram stories. Yes. In the early aughts. It wasn't really even the early aughts at that point. But no, very few people were at Whale Rock. I feel like we saw the people as they were coming down as we were going up. And then there really wasn't anybody
else.
There
were some girls.
There was one girl when we were on our way down.
Oh, yeah.
That was coming up. And she was like, oh, how was that? Like, was it good? And we're like, yeah, it was super fun. Like, you should definitely take advantage of this. Like, what a great, like, experience it was to go up there.
Yeah.
Because there was definitely, like, and I feel like once we got to the top, we had to, like, kind of traverse, like, there were a lot of, like, little drops in the rock. Like, where there were crevices in the rock. So we had to, like, kind of traverse that a little bit. So there were some tricky sections up there. But if you enjoyed...
It was overall flat.
Yeah.
But and I never felt like I was going to, like, fall off the side or anything.
No.
Because it is just like a large boulder that's just like sitting there.
A gigantic boulder.
That is sort of like the size of a whale.
Right. I felt like in the Neverending Story, the giant turtle, whose name I can't remember, was just going to come to life.
Oh, right.
In the Swamps of Sadness and then eat Atreus' horse. What was the horse's name?
I don't know. But then the horse did.
I know.
Stop. Now I'm going to cry. Oh, my God. Don't bring that up I know, casually it's in the middle of conversation.
I know.
No.
That turtle. That moving old on. 20 turtle.
Moving on. We finished Whale Rock. We head back down to the car. And then we were like, all right, I think we're done for today in Canyonlands.
We had done like a good like 10 miles just in Canyonlands of hiking, which was like perfect. And it's at this point, we're probably close to like 4 or 5 o'clock by the time, you know, we had done Upheaval Dome and by the time we had done this incline loop and Whale Rock. So I think we were kind of fully had a full day of hiking and really just exhausted at this point. So with that, we kind of meander our way along the roadway in our car back out, stopping at you know, at least one of those overlooks, which I had mentioned at the beginning, to kind of pull off and see some more of the canyons in the distance and the islands in the sky.
Okay, so let's talk about the Karen Stone scale. This is our way of rating strenuous hikes, I say with air quotes with my fingers right now, mm-hmm. because...
Use your imaginations, folks.
Strenuous is a word that all of the national parks throw around right and left to describe their hikes. And we have seen this word all over the place, but there's never sort of like a truly a way to rate the difficulty or like the ease or how strenuous one strenuous hike is in mm-hmm. one park to another. So this is sort of our way of trying to bridge that gap.
Yeah.
Between one strenuous and another.
Right.
So scale of 1 to 10 on the Karen Stone scale, mm-hmm. what would you give the Syncline Loop Trail?
I'm going to say a 7. I feel like it is definitely not like... I didn't feel exhausted by the end of it, but there are a lot of like twist turns and ups and downs that you're going to do work. Like it's not anything that you can just like,
better work.
Yeah, it's not anything you can kind of just avoid the work. Like you have to put the work in there. But it is like a kind of a fascinating look at a really large geological feature. Yeah.
I would also give it a 7,
yeah.
which means that it gets 14 Karen Stones.
Out of 20.
Out of 20.
Yeah.
It's going to take 14 to build that Karen.
That's right.
So
what about Mesa Arch for you?
That's not even a thing. Zero so Karen Stones. No, nothing.
Not even a 1?
It is
you have to have a 1.
It is the trail from the parking lot. It is not a thing.
It is a 1, folks. It is a 1.
You can give it a 1 because there's nothing. Like, one does not equal
it's a
Karen.
Half-mile loop.
It's a half-mile loop, like, in the same way that it's, like, a half-mile loop for me to, like, walk down the street to my neighbor's house.
Right, but there's more involved in that, I feel like. There was some... You were climbing over things. You were doing things.
I don't really remember.
I think you can't go 0. Things. How about that?
Well, I mean, you can't go 1 either, because 1 doesn't make a Karen.
So, 2 make a Karen?
No, because I'm not giving it a 1. No parents.
One
were
can have
created.
A dream, baby, and two can make a dream come true.
So yeah, that's my feeling on. I mean, do go see Mesa Arch. It's not hard to get out there.
And what about Whale Rock?
Whale Rock, I would give. So there's definitely a part of Whale Rock where you have to like hoist yourself up to the top of that rock. I mean, you there's get like, eased yeah. into it. Yeah. Like they give you a way to do it. But I would say like a 6.
Yeah, I was going to say a 5.
Yeah. Great. So 11 Karen Stones.
Yeah, 11 Karen Stones so out yeah, of that one, 20.
I'm really, really glad that we did not skip Whale Rock.
Me
so,
too.
Thank you.
I think if we had more time, I feel like we would have, like our Airbnb host had said, probably have gone to Needles the next day after having spent like a really nice time in Islands in the Sky. As like a nice primer for Canyonlands. I think we got a really nice introduction to it. And there's clearly a million more things to see there.
Of course. Yeah. It's time for Jeopardy. Mike, I'm going to start with my category today.
Beautiful. I'm looking forward to it.
The title of my category is called Canyonlands Word Scramble.
Great.
In this category, I have taken the word Canyonlands, and every one of the answers is a word that can be spelled with the letters of Canyonlands.
Beautiful.
So you have to guess the word based on the clue.
Great.
Are you ready?
And the available letters that I have.
And the available letters that you have.
Wonderful.
So, Canyonlands word scramble for 100. This was the occupation that Fran Drescher had in her hit 90s TV sitcom.
What is a nanny?
Correct. 200. If you have a pot of boiling water, you could cook someone dinner, or you could do this to their face.
What is scald?
Correct. 300. This is the first name of Miss Summer, who sang Last Dance, or the name of any given mom in the 90s.
What is Donna?
Correct. For 400. often something you eat as an appetizer. Some people prefer it tossed.
What is a salad?
Correct. And finally, the $500 clue. The Shonda Rhimes train wreck you should have stopped watching after season two.
What a scandal.
Correct.
5 for 5, everybody.
5 for 5. You feel better about yourself?
I do. I feel so good about myself.
I got so much shade thrown at me for my arches in government category. And I was like,
you're archy.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Did we hear 10 Lords of Leaping? Did we hear only 10 IC?
Yeah.
We did not get the shade then.
Mm-hmm.
Also, right. I have a corrections corner to offer.
Oh.
Because you said that a government made of 7 people could be called a septarchy. And I said that was incorrect. It was a heptarchy. But it's true. Septarchy is a word and it is an option.
Beautiful. My category is called Act a Fool in honor of April Fools, which has recently passed.
Great.
In this category, you will be naming the actor and the movie based on the description.
Great.
Great. Two fools travel to Aspen in order to reunite a suitcase full of cash with a love interest of one of the dynamic dummies. Beheaded birds, blue and orange tuxes, laxatives, and a kidnapping make this caper a stupid romp in 90s film history.
I just thought he was really quiet. What is Dumb and Dumber?
And who's the actor I'm talking about?
You're talking about Jim Carrey.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Great. Act a Fool for 200. This fool often plays an idiot, whether it is at a Pennsylvania business or in a city whose name means whale's vagina in Spanish. He can be counted on for getting us to laugh or throwing a projectile to kill someone. As his character's name in this film suggests, he must be thick.
Oh, my answer was going to be Steve Carell.
That's correct. In what film?
Oh, I don't know.
What is Anchorman?
Oh, movies I didn't see.
Oh, secrets.
I never saw Anchorman. Oh, well.
That's okay. Act a Fool for 300. A fundamental fool in this early 80s comedy, this SNL alum, Dum Dum, spends some of the film trying to exterminate a whack-a-mole relative while pretending he still is a nom.
Oh my God. Is it Chris Farley?
No, that's incorrect.
I don't know.
It's Bill Murray in Caddyshack.
Oh, another movie I never saw.
I was waiting for that. Uh-huh. All right. Act a Fool for 400. All right, all right, all right. One of this fool's earliest roles was in a film that helped to propel the careers of other actors like Parker Posey, Mila Jovovich, and Ben Affleck. Taking place on the last day of school in Austin, Texas, this creepy postgraduate fool utters the line, "That's what I love about these high school girls, man. I get older, they stay the same age."
Who is Matthew McConaughey in Half-Baked?
Incorrect. The first part's correct. The second part is Dazed and Confused.
I have seen that movie. But I didn't know the answer. For the record, while all of my high school peers were like watching these movies and talking about how like cool they were because they'd seen them, like I was watching Leslie Ann Warren in Cinderella.
Mm-hmm, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Act a Fool for 500. This beautiful, funny fool takes a shot at living in the real world after being ejected from her life in Hef's mansion. It's a good thing that she dazzles a motley group of outcast sorority sisters and helps them go from not to hot in this comedy where we learn that the eyes are the nipples of the face.
Okay. This movie is ridiculous, and I did see it. And it is, who is Anna Faris in The House Bunny?
That's correct. What a wonderful film. It is so ridiculous.
It is. And Catherine McPhee is in it.
Mm-hmm.
And Emma Stone is in it.
Yes. And Kat Dennings.
That's right.
That's right. It's an all-star cast.
Yep. And there we go.
And there we go. This has been Gaze at the National Parks, And we're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
Follow us on Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks, or email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com.
Gaze at the National Parks was created and is hosted by Dustin Ballard and Michael Ryan.
This episode was edited by Dustin Ballard.
All original artwork on Instagram is by Michael Ryan.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman with Mariella Klinger.
We would also like to acknowledge that while hiking in Canyonlands National Park, that we were on the traditional lands of the Ute Indian tribe.
If you enjoyed this episode of Gaze at the National Parks, leave us a comment, write us a review. We always love hearing your feedback.